CKUT 89.5, Toronto.
And we're back. It is the Taylor Report. And Phil Connon is here. Just before we went to break, what those sounds were people of Aleppo celebrating. I urge you to go online, look at it. There are crowds, and it's cold, by the way, in Aleppo. They have winter, and but they're all out because actually, Aleppo has been quite a story. Aleppo, west in Aleppo, the city, never fell to the terrorists, but the east side did for some period of time. And there was a great hue and cry, and all kinds of propaganda tricks and devices were used to try to convince us that President Assad was the villain, and that the poor people of East Aleppo, you know, they could face a massacre or being driven out of the city. As soon as the terrorists were defeated, the city actually went back to being the city. And all this talk about, there's going to be all these refugees, didn't happen. So many of the people from East Aleppo had moved already to West Aleppo. There was also a legend about how many there were there. Anybody could get out, being civilians, got out. Because, you know, when there are armed groups coming around and they start doing things like knocking through a hole from your neighbor's house to yours, it's time to move. And people went to West Aleppo. But there was confusion, I think, for people trying to keep track of the war or to understand that in recent weeks, the Syrian army has begun an offensive against this area called Idlib, which is where the terrorist groups, Al-Qaeda, it's them, and ISIS, if whatever your favorite term is, have a stronghold, and it's the last one. And it had and that's in the general region of the province of Aleppo. So the people living in the city were still victims of mortar fire, and some rockets, some drone activity, by the way. Where do terrorists get drones, I wonder? But now they've been eliminated. They've actually abandoned.
And Phil, there's a news item today that even when Aleppo was liberated, they were not in a position to open the airport because they couldn't assure the security of planes taking off and landing. But this week, in fact, I think yesterday, for the first time in 9 years, there are commercial flights in and out of Aleppo. And the first flight was from Damascus. And now they're saying they're going to be flying a flight a couple of times a week to Cairo. So this is another big advance for the stabilization of Syria.
Yeah. Yes. And there's traffic between Jordan and Syria, which had been cut off. These highways are opening up, and this is not making the U.S. administration happy, nor the French, nor the British. They still want to make trouble if they can. The other thing is that the city of Aleppo and city of Damascus, the highway has been reopened. Now, that highway has not really been passable for civilians. You could make it, but it would be a military. You'd require some assistance to do it. As far as I know, it was discouraged. But now that the highway is open, this is momentous. This is something we should be really happy about. That this country was subjected to an all-out assault by terrorists coming into the country through Turkey, Jordan, and the Israeli border, and Lebanon, mainly with the assistance of going back. Remember that not that many years ago, President Erdogan of Turkey was claiming that he was going to join his Muslim friends in Damascus. They were going to. He was allowing all this to go on, and it was being paid for by the United States and primarily by Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states. However, they took on a cause that they couldn't finish. They it became and is still a contest between the sovereign state of Syria and other. It has, by the way, quiet allies. Like Algeria is quite friendly and supportive. They're just not in a position to come and join in the fight. But at any rate, Syria was able. It had a sufficient infrastructure and loyal population, satisfied with their government, and they were not. They had not been totally seduced into what's called neoliberalism. And also, of course, they had maintained very good ties with the Islamic Republic. For those who sometimes compare Iraq and Syria, and they say that they had the same policies, not true. When Saddam Hussein was in power, he attacked the Islamic Republic. It was a nine-year war, horrible war, which Henry Kissinger enjoyed because he said both sides should kill each other off. That'd be a happy exercise. Millions will die. And Kissinger thought that was appropriate, as did Madeleine Albright. But remember, Syria supported the Islamic Republic against Saddam Hussein's attack on the Islamic Republic. So this is not a shallow relationship. This is something, and then also they have a relationship to Russia, and it's not a shallow relationship. The way the editorialists here write about it, you know, they at the height of hypocrisy and cynicism, they always thought, well, somebody's manipulating so-and-so. But actually those relations are long-standing. And the other thing that factors into this, and remember, this is a backdrop of the liberation of the territory of Aleppo now, as of today, that the U.S., that would be President Obama and Hillary Clinton and the British and the French, ganged up to overthrow Gaddafi, President Gaddafi of Libya. And at that time, President Putin was said to them, you are intervening there in the name of humanitarian intervention, and you say that you're neutral about the outcome of the war, but you just care about civilians. However, we noticed that you have now begun to bomb and to go way beyond any mandate of no-fly zone. Now you are violently participating. So he said, we can't go along with this any longer. That's basically, he told them, that's your last little show for. And that's really, if you want to date all the ugliness and all the Russophobia and all that, it goes to the time Putin wrote, you could check it out, a letter to the New York Times. This last time the New York Times published a letter by him. But it was rather clear. He said, We at the Security Council, if you tell us you're going to do something, and we all agree that it's probably a good thing, and then we can go forward. But if you lie to us, you say you're going to do one thing and then you do another, then we have to change the rules, and we're not going to buy it anymore. So that became, when it came to Syria, and they said, President Assad, according to Obama, he has to step down. Russia said, we don't agree with you. That's none of your business. And Putin reminded them, when he asked them about the way they moved their troops in Eastern Europe toward his border, he said, if I asked them why you're putting missiles in Poland, he said they would tell me, it's none of your business. So that's how we find ourselves where we are right now. Phil, there's another matter here that you care about public health. You've worked in hospitals and whatnot. I think we should be very concerned there's a lot of racism, a lot of hostility in the so-called reporting on China, and the New York Times has to be the worst. Instead of writing a factual report, which the readers need, They every story has to be about the failure of the government or the criminal all the bad things that they have done, according to the New York Times. And this is really irresponsible, the height of irresponsibility. The World Health Organization, and you can tell me, but aren't they satisfied? And the United States isn't the king of the world. It's just a country.
So this is there was a meeting between President Xi and Tedros Ghebreyesus, who is the director general of the World Health Organization. And so the president of China received him. And this is what the director of the World Health Organization, the director general, said, quote, "We appreciate the seriousness with which China is taking this outbreak, especially the commitment from top leadership and the transparency they have demonstrated, including sharing data and the genetic sequence of the virus. The World Health Organization will keep working side by side with China and all other countries to protect health and keep people safe." And later on in the statement, he says that what we need in the world now is solidarity. And that's the World Health Organization Director General. And the response to that was articles in the National Post saying that this guy should be removed.
Just what?
That this guy should be removed, the head of the WHO.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
The politicization of a public health issue, particularly when China's working zealously, by the way, Canada's health minister said that today, zealously to protect us. We're being protected by a government and a health system that is determined to limit the spread of the virus, which requires a lot of science and a lot of cooperation.
And by contrast, a member of Donald Trump's cabinet said, This epidemic is a business opportunity for American business.
Yes,
and that, I mean, it shows you where their mind is at, which is that, how can we take advantage of this?
Right? It's called, I think he's down, kick him.
Yeah.
But
of course, they're not down.
They're not down by a long shot.
Right.
As a matter of fact, TELUS today is saying they're going to go with Huawei.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, and that brings us to Bernie, by the way. Now we can jump to Bernie.
Yeah.
And I like the Bernie-crats, and good for him. And he's brought up the word socialism, and he's tackling some stuff that needs to be tackled, eliminating student debt, medicine for all Americans, and free tuition, and all. There's a lot of socialist ideas, which, by the way, are going to be like catnip to the American public, actually, because they've been wanting to hear something like this since Roosevelt, and who he very often invokes. I think we're going to have to make sure everybody keeps in mind some of the downdraft in Bernie's positions. And the best reference I could suggest to you is go to the New York Times interview with Bernie. As somebody remarked in Global Research, and you can find an article, Global Research, and it was called to my attention by reading Jane Stillwater, who writes we've had her on the show, and she writes, I think it's crime fiction. She'll probably kick me if I get it wrong. But anyhow, and she said, there's an article about Bernie, his interview with the New York Times, and then she writes, goes, dot, 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 wah?
yeah, that's a wah.
Yeah,
that is.
And it is. Okay, so here's the problem. He actually, on the subject of China, is probably as dangerous, if not more, than Trump. And he really invokes things that are none of his business, in which he couldn't possibly have done his due diligence. He said that you couldn't have trade agreements or normal relations so long as there's any question about Hong Kong and the Uyghurs. And that is, I'd call that very inflammatory. He's also in favor of the freedom of the seas, that is, it's sailing American warships in the South China Sea. That's actually provocative. He also says that he's in favor of humanitarian intervention. He would do that. He also said that he would be willing to preemptively strike North Korea or Iran preemptively if he thought they were going to get testing a missile that they had been prohibiting from testing. That isn't a crime. International law, that's a sovereign country. And as the authors of the article in Global Research point out, you see, that's that doctrine, the preemptive doctrine, is a dangerous, that's like, we used to call it nitroglycerin. It violates the Nuremberg conclusions that threatening another state, saying that you would strike them differently, is a violation of international law. And it's one thing to say, okay, Bush said that, Clinton said it, Obama said it, but this is Bernie. So, and by the way, he didn't win over the Times. I would say to him, quit sucking up. You're not going to get 2 cents out of it.
Yeah.
And there is a blogger, I call him bloggers, actually has a Twitter account, M. Tracy. Do you ever see M. Tracy?
I've heard the name, but remind me. Yeah.
He's a very good day-to-day commentator on what's going on with the Democrats. He's very good on the Iowa tricks and the New Hampshire propaganda and Bloomberg. He said Bloomberg is, you know, Darth Vader. And it's various.
That's an insult to Darth Vader.
Yeah,
come on.
Darth Vader is a fairly decent guy by comparison. You've seen the story.
Yes.
Bloomberg and the problem with the women, and one of his women colleagues for a birthday present collected every dirty joke she'd heard him tell, and there were some so bad you couldn't put them in a book, and she gave it to him as a birthday present. Didn't change him at all, of course. He's not changeable. But he's a billionaire. Since there is a school in the Democratic Party thinks we need more money and we need a guy as dirty as Trump. And you think, I suppose that's
possible. Found him.
You had a few before. Why not? But anyway, we just want to say that, you know, tell Bernie to get his act together. Jane Stillwater says she now goes to Bernie meetings with her wearing a Tulsi Gabbard button. The New York Times. Yeah. By the way, I wanted to check. They claim they're interviewing the candidates, but I was looking at the pictures. I don't think I saw Tulsi. I don't think the New York Times wants to talk to Tulsi because she really challenges her foreign policy. Where she would differ with him completely on the Russia thing, the China thing. That's really her. That's where she says, no, we have to have a completely different approach.
And, you know, what's really upsetting about Bernie getting sucked in like this is that these questions that they put to him, they're all hypotheticals. Like, why do you have to say to the New York Times, look, your question's a trick because that's not the situation here. So why are you asking me all these hypotheticals, right?
He should have just attacked them.
Yeah.
He should have said, what's wrong with your paper? Can we talk about your paper? And if you're going to ask me about Korea, what's wrong with your paper on Korea? And then and they would have disliked him. He could dislike them, but he could run against them. Incidentally, the mayor of New York City has endorsed him.
That's interesting.
And they say, well, but he hates Bloomberg. Says, that part we get.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we all hate Bloomberg. I mean, that's a given. But you don't get any points for hating Bloomberg, right?
And the other point, and M. Tracy makes this, he says, Bernie's saying things he is going to bite him. He said the one is that he accepts the Russiagate thing, and he went along with impeachment. He said it's clear the American population didn't buy into it. They see it as just Democrats and Republicans slagging each other. So you think you're wrapped in the flag and that everybody loves you for it. No, they don't. It's a very ugly thing to watch. That particular, Pelosi and Trump. Pelosi is so rotten on China. I was saw her the other night on Huawei, and a paranoid idiot, the Chinese official asked her, said, it's only technology. It doesn't have a political. And she said, you introduced all kinds of technology in our country, and we accepted it. And but now we develop something, you say, oh, that's the devil. You know, it really, you are talking about witchcraft.
And by the way, while Pelosi is pretending this great opposition to Trump during the State of the Union, they interrupt themselves. Oh, we have an honored guest in the gallery, interim president Guaido of Venezuela, and there's Pelosi jumping to her feet and applauding wildly. She has to be seen to be applauding even more wildly than Trump is. You know?
Yes, Trump.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, that. That's why people want, you know, Bernie and Tulsi represent a different, completely different take. And Tulsi has her demerit points. But look, you know, I don't know the person, but definitely what job one is to stop the war machine and to quit justifying intervention around the world. And I would say that that issue. Where she's better than Bernie, actually. People should say that. She's better than Bernie on that point. At any rate, you're listening to the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I want to make tell a story again. this is about Canada. And the Prime Minister has said he met with, you saw the Foreign Minister of the Islamic Republic?
Yes.
And he said, and then the Prime Minister said, they don't have the technology. And I think he even used the patronizing word expertise to analyze the flight recorders of the Flight 752 that was shot down. This is bad, bad stuff. Because actually they are the legally responsible state. And this colonial patronizing approach is just leveraging, helping United States and Trump to try to create havoc or a problem for the Islamic Republic. And I was very impressed with the reply of Mr. Zarif, I believe. And Zarif said, you know, the Americans could come here. We invite them. Bring your equipment. And together, we'll examine the flight recorder, but don't tell us, a sovereign country that has had a tragedy that we need to understand and we're answerable for, to hand over this black box to you, who, by the way, you call us the enemy, right? So this is an adversarial relationship into which Canada has played. Canada has participated in hostile actions towards the Islamic Republic. So if you're going to talk to them, you have to go about it in a more respectful way. And they are saying, so why doesn't Trudeau turn to the United States and say, they're inviting you to take your equipment, go to Tehran, why don't you go? And they say, we're starting to ask ourselves, why don't you want to do that? Is there something you know that maybe is we might find out in this box? And I have to say, in the 3 minutes I have remaining, that I can't resist pointing this out. Canada says you should turn the box, the flight recorder, over to France. Give it to France. That's what he said. Now, in 1994, April the 6th, a plane, a French plane, pilot and crew, was landing in Kigali, Rwanda, and it was shot out of the sky with two missiles. And two presidents died, the president of Burundi and the president of Rwanda. The box, the flight recorder, was recovered by the Rwandan government forces. They gave it to Canadian General Dallaire of UNAMIR. The French sent two officers, uniformed officers, to Dallaire's office, and they said, there has to be an investigation. We want to know what you're doing on this, and we would like to participate in the investigation. The French asked. It was their plane. And General Dallaire said no. And then he said, I read his testimony. I'm speaking from his testimony. He said, I had already contacted the Americans to send investigators. That was what he told the court. So he told, when the French asked him to participate in the investigation of the death of their own pilots and crew and the two presidents, Burundi and Rwanda, Dallaire said no. He didn't like them. I mean, you read his book, he hated the French. And so his personal pique, and by the way, okay, full stop. Where did a Unimair officer get off deciding who gets to do the investigating of a death of a plane crash in Rwanda? But he gave himself that authority. Then, here's the kicker, kids. They lost it. He sent it to New York, and it has not been seen since. So I would say to Prime Minister Trudeau, be a little humble. Your general told the French no when they asked, and then he sent it to New York, to the UN headquarters, and to this day, that was 1994, to this day, the box has never been seen again. So, which makes me wonder what was in that box, because the only people handling it were NATO people. I know they were at the UN, but every last one of them was a NATO person. So that's kind of important to remember. So this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. And I, on our flight business, I'll also remind you that 29 people were killed on Air India flight. 268 of them were Canadians. The bomb was put on the plane by Canadians. 268 Canadians killed. Canada investigated. That happened in 1985. They didn't arrest anybody till the year 2000. And no one was convicted of doing it. It took them all those years and no justice, Prime Minister Trudeau, at all for 268 Canadians, and it was your government, and didn't do a damn thing. Acquittals. Air India. Anyway, we won't hear about that. This is a Taylor Report, and according to Brayton, we have to shut up. So we'll see you next week.